Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
25 hours to go until the Sabres regular season begins in Czechia with a pair of games against the Devils this weekend. There are still 23 preseason games to be played in the NHL between now and when the real thing begins, but that's for Shayna Goldman's segment. What about the beauty of the boys in the white jerseys trimmed in blue and gold today for their first team photo?
Well, it looks really sharp. I know. We all love the black and red, the goat head, but that
No, we don't. Picture, blue and gold all the way.
No. We all love the black and red. It's nice. But that look, the crispiness of the white and the blue and the gold and everybody together is fantastic.
Irony, it's right in front of a black and red logo and the gold, Global Series. That's nice.
You know what? I want to be the one to develop a system where the logo at center ice can change under the ice so that we're wearing blue and gold, it's blue and gold. When we're wearing black and red, it's black and red, whatever. But you could see that it would work if it was both colors scheme put together. Mm-hmm. So, but a great picture. The fans, a lot of fans taken in practice in Czechia. There's fans behind the picture and they're all there to watch the NHL players take action in their practice day before the season starts in Prague.
I wouldn't say a lot. I'd say a smattering of fans, but sure, whatever.
I anticipate the back behind the camera is packed. They told them to get out. Get out of the way. We want a team picture. That's why it would be packed.
The countdown is on, almost under 24 hours till it all begins. Shayna Goldman, Darren Dreger join us here on Sabres Live today. It's the last Sabres Live until next Tuesday. So let's give it our best shot, Marty. What is the storyline on the eve of the season opener against the Devils?
I have a not so serious and a serious one. So the not so serious is...
Is this like show non like sports or non-sports?
Maybe, but this is... I couldn't find Owen Power in the team picture. And I had to do a double take. Like I think he got his hair cut. He may have some facial hair. Like it's a new Owen Power. And I thought he looked different in preseason. So now with a bit of a new look, like I'm excited for him. I think he provides offense this year. We talked about that at plenty. I think the Sabres, there's the hot take for the year. We'll have a top five offense in the National Hockey League this season. That's how I see it happening. It's not just Thompson. It's going to be everybody up front, the defense. I think the Sabres have a top five offense in the making, and it starts tomorrow. But that's the hot take, and that's what the focus will be on every time I watch them, is how can they continue to provide more added speed, added scoring chances, added offense, and throughout the lineup.
Well, with an early look and not so early, because I'm sure some people have already digested all of these names and positions for quite a while, we could look head-to-head at what the Sabres are rolling out right now and what the Devils are likely to roll out tomorrow. Yes. When you start stacking these two teams up, as far as their line combinations and pairings at this point in time, we'll save goaltending for a moment down the road, because obviously that's a huge storyline for the Devils this year.
Yes.
But we've spent a lot of time, this is a five-liner, so disregard the bottom three because they, we're not dressing 15 forwards tomorrow. But these are the 15 in practice today.
It's a depth up front.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to go head-to-head, but my bad for not identifying that earlier. But anyway, when you look at how the Sabres are likely to line up with their top four lines tomorrow against the Devils, I would give the experience and potential offensive edge to the Devils. That might be just me.
Well, it'll be interesting because tomorrow is a home game for the Buffalo Sabres. So how does Lindy Ruff, knowing what he knows about the New Jersey Devils, how does he deploy his lines? Because he will have final say in. Like, for me, if I'm the Devils, I'm using Nico Hischier, Dawson Mercer, and Thomas Tatar against Tage Thompson. But if I'm Lindy Ruff, I'm going Thompson against Jack Hughes. I'm saying, you know what? Let's go head-to-head. Let's go put our big guy against our big guy, and, you know, we'll come out on top. So that's the difference. I think tomorrow that's the one unique angle is that if you're the Devils, you probably want a different matchup than what Lindy Ruff would want in the first game.
Well, here's the thing. The top two lines, I think, are quite possibly even across the board. Sorry, can we flash back to the Devils one there, Jeff? When you look at the bottom six, which is where the Sabres' emphasis has been on, and we've spoke ad nauseum about it, the Devils, over the last couple of years, have very much evolved in the bottom six as well.
Yes.
And especially with the acquisition of a very playoff-proven, in his role, Stefan Nason, right? And Paul Carter coming from the Vegas organization. Like, I think there's an interesting conversation. But
Andre Palat,
well,
Andre
but Palat Palat's been there. That's what I mean. Like that. What do you see? Like, when you go first blush at the Sabres bottom six and the Devils bottom six here, and they have a little bit of depth beyond it. But I think, you know, the hope for them would be able to utilize the six that are expected tomorrow, which is Palat, Hall, and Nason, Cotter, Lazar, Bastian. How do you see? Is there a gap between the two? Are there similarities there?
The gap is in size. The Sabres are way bigger in size than the Devils' bottom six.
But especially, Eric Hall has proven to be a much higher scorer than Ryan McLeod in a third-line center position.
Eric Hall has got speed and has got ability, and Andre Palat's got tons of experience. And you mentioned Nason, and we all know we had our date in in Henderson, Vegas, and saw Paul Cotter play for the Henderson Silver Knights and watched him over the years. Yes, they have some really good players in their bottom six. Mm-hmm. But the way that I look at the way the Sabres have built their bottom six and the difference between the Devils and the Sabres' bottom six is the size. Jordan Greenway towers over everybody. Malenstein Lafferty, Obe Kubel are bigger than Curtis Lazar and Bastian and Palat. And so I'm looking at the size difference, and I think that is an advantage to the Sabres. Now, okay, you got to use your size. You got to be able to get a forecheck. You got to be able to win one-on-one battles. Those players for the Devils in the bottom six, even a little smaller, have shown that they can win one-on-one battles and be aggressive and get a high tempo type play. Mm-hmm. But the size is definitely noticeable. So for me, if you can use that size to your advantage in front of the net, right? Like, okay, let's win that battle in front of the net against the Devils. Because the Devils back end, whoever's going to play against those lines, maybe a Seamus Casey or Simon Nemitz. And, you know, that's not great size on their third pair. So use that size. Go to the front of the net. Make it, you're going to have that advantage. So I'm not saying that the Sabres' advantage in this game is your bottom six versus their bottom six. But it should be a check mark in my book when you look at the bottom two lines on both sides.
Right, but the massive difference potentially, and maybe even for just two of the 82 games this regular season, would be on the blue line coming in. The Sabres are healthy. They have a new group, given that it's Bo Byram's first start of season with the Sabres. So when you look at Dahlin and Joakim Harju, and again, Henry had an excellent preseason, excellent end of last year, might be the perfect guy for Dahlin. It remains to be seen. But Byram and Power, a healthy Samuelson with Clifton, is the expected group of six. The Devils cannot boast a healthy group of six. In fact, they're arguably at worst. I mean, they're missing either their third and fourth defenseman or their second and third defenseman, depending on how you slice it. They don't have the major acquisition of the offseason in Brett Pesce, who's injured right now, has been injured since the end of last year, and Luke Hughes, who we talked about, I don't know, less than a month ago when he got dinged up and he's not ready to go yet. So that creates an enormous hole. The fact you're looking at Siegenthaler, who is remarkably consistent and quietly effective, paired up with Kovacevic as the second pair potentially tomorrow, instead of having a Pesce and a Hughes, is a massive difference right now that Sheldon Keefe and the Devils have to work through.
Yeah, well, Jonathan Kovacevic, I mean, he was in Montreal and was not a factor in their top four, top five in Montreal. Montreal didn't have a good team, right? He was a younger guy that they decided to part ways with. So I think Dougie Hamilton is their number one defenseman. Like you said, Luke Hughes and Brett Pesce are number two and three. Brendan Dillon, Siegenthaler.
He's a four, I think, based on an argument to be made for sure between him and Siegenthaler. Dillon's further along in his career, but really helps
They're four A, four B. They're missing their second and third best defensemen in a lot of different aspects. Right? In skating, in offense, in supporting the rush, and in eating minutes, in power play. They're missing a big piece on the blue line. And yes, the Sabres are healthy after that little, you know, scare on first day of camp where Rasmus Dahlin left with a mid body, but has played the last preseason game against Red Bull, has looked good, has been engaged in everything at practice. So I think the Sabres are going into the season 99.99999% healthy on the back end. The Devils cannot say that. The Devils have probably got hit with a 30 or 40% hit when you take Hughes and Pesce out.
We're a week away from the home opener at KeyBank Center. Of course, it's presented by the BFLO store, and we want to see you for the party in the plaza, blue and gold carpet, player arrivals, live music, great activities, rally towel giveaway for the first 15,000 fans. And again, it'll be the Sabres and the Kings. It'll be game three of the regular season, but it'll be the first one truly at home. We can't wait for that.
Yes.
Just like we've had to adjust our schedule in the best way possible to bring in Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Hi, Shayna. Keep in mind, if we do broach the topic of preseason games, this is not a podcast, and we will need to keep it clean.
Yeah, my best behavior. You know what? I feel like I needed to get that out of my system to feel better, and it definitely, it helped me. It was a cathartic thing, because preseason this year, let's have a preseason game tonight.
Exactly.
I get that.
What are we doing?
Have you noticed I'm sure you have, the most incredible oddity with the preseason schedule is that everything comes to a natural conclusion on Saturday. There's no games on Sunday, and there's a random Nashville Tampa one-off on Monday before the season begins at 1:30 in the afternoon local in Seattle on a Tuesday. That's not a holiday.
Yep.
Producer Jeff wants to know.
The Monday reschedule makes Shayna, sense.
Producer Jeff wants to know if the Nashville Tampa is a COVID reschedule from 3 years ago.
There we go. Imagine. This is the only league that would be like, think about it. Anyone else? I get it. Gate revenues matter, especially for hockey. But like a Tampa, Nashville preseason game that has to be rescheduled because of the hurricane, you think they would say,
oh man,
let's cancel it? No. The people need more preseason hockey. And then you hear from the Board of Governors like, well, maybe we'll finally shorten preseason, but we'll add more games to the regular season. Like, no, we need to shorten the regular season to like 70 games. Like, see, this is what's why are we doing this? Can we stop? And then if you add in more teams, like naturally you're gonna get more games because more combinations and things like that. Why? I'm tired. I've had enough.
Shayna, I have a plan. The Marty plan is twofold. One is if you want to balance the schedule and you have 32 teams, you may have to go to 84 games. So you play four in your division, three in the other division, two in the other conference. Or you can do eight divisions of four teams. And now if you balance it the right way, you play 80 games. So a little this or that for you. Do you like eight divisions of four teams, 80 games, or the current divisions, 84 games?
I like the current divisions better, but the 80 games is swaying me. But you know what? I'm going to go with the 84-game season. I didn't think this would be my answer, but I'm going to add to it with the idea of expansion, which I disagree with, because if you add two teams, let's face it, we're adding four teams because we got to keep those divisions balanced, right? Like, we're a professional league here. Let's act like it.
I'm okay with four more.
Sure. If we must, but then everyone's gonna be like, let's expand the playoffs. My Good. Pitch, besides, I have thoughts about realigning the divisions and the playoff plans, but if we must expand the playoffs, I would like a 3-game wild card series where 8 goes up against 11 and 9 goes up against 10. Oh, yeah. And then the best of 3 winner gets to be, wait, no, I screwed that up.
7, 10, 8, and 9. Yes. Yeah,
thank you. And then that's how you decide the 7th and 8th wild card seeds. So it's not like we're saying, let's play 82 games and throw them out the door for everybody. If you are good enough to be 1 through 6, you get a couple days off. So, and I love that.
So Gary Bettman comes from basketball, and basketball is doing a little bit different. It's 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10. The winner of 7-8 gets the 7th place. The loser plays the winner of 9-10. So you get a double chance, a little bit like Canadian curling. But I do like that. Now, here's another Marty plan, because we're all in agreement that the league, even though let's not talk about expansion, it's like we don't talk about Bruno, right? We don't talk about expansion, but they will go to 36 teams. Before long, it's going to be 36 teams. So I have 6 six-team divisions, 3 six-team division in East, 3 in the West, and I have an 80-game schedule with 36 teams. I can
now we are cooking. Let's go.
Now this is the best of both worlds. 36 teams, 80 games schedule.
In a nice spiral notebook and all, like, love it.
And you know what? They were the first to go to Vegas among the major leagues. So why not be the first to get to 36 teams?
Yeah.
Seriously, this is a league that is missing some of the biggest markets, not entirely their fault, but they're missing Houston. They're missing Atlanta.
It is their fault. It is their fault because they chose not to go there in the first place. I'm not giving them any credit.
Shayna, they've been to Atlanta twice. The problem was whoever was running the team couldn't get them to win, and the fan base naturally didn't keep showing up. So that's not on the NHL.
Ownership is huge when it comes to those markets. Yeah. Look at what happened in Arizona, right? Ownership in Utah is a different market.
Seriously, go into Phoenix, Houston, Atlanta at minimum, and then one more where, like, it's easy to get to 36.
There will be a
second
team in Toronto at some point as well.
Yes, that would have been ideal. That should have been done 6 years ago when it was widely rumored.
There's 2 in LA. There's 3 in New York. 100%. When you add Philadelphia and everything, it's huge. Yeah. So it'll be, I think 36 is a given. But Shayna, I want to bring you back to Sabres Live and not NHL Live, which I love the NHL Live aspect of our show anyway. So that's not that. But you did have, you and the athletic staff writers put together a Sabres preview. Yes. So here's the big lines from that Sabres preview. Sabres are, with your staff, looking at potentially being 6 in the Atlantic with 88.7 points. You know, there's some big questions there, and the questions are directed at you. 88 points is low, in my opinion, for the Sabres. Were you one that was pushing for higher, or were you right in that sweet spot?
Blame Dom. No, we're very quick to blame Dom because we're always like, your first byline, you're the one leading this. Like, let's go. blame Dom for the modeling. Blame me for the rest of it because I wrote a lot of that one. I would say I believe the model to an extent because it's not accounting for the context that we know and that we're going to apply to it, right? That's why we write 3,000 words to go with that projection. Is the projection lower than I think a lot of us would want to see for Buffalo because we're all waiting for that moment? Yes, because it's so tricky when you compare the 2 complete opposite seasons that they had, right? Mm-hmm. How do we know we can't apply coaching impacts? I wish we could. The day that we can really quantify that, I'm going to be over the moon. But I like that it's a low starting point because I think they can push the ceiling higher, but it's looking at it going, you didn't change the roster much. And we know that the offense really wilted last year and players are going to have to prove something. But that range of values is so important to keep in mind because we know they could have higher ceilings. And they showed that 2 years ago, as long as those ceilings offensively don't come with issues defensively. And I think the other intriguing part of it is we know that there's a coach now in place who has experience with the team in a similar position, who has experience with the team that has the strengths to be this amazing rush-based team, but now he has totally different assistant coaches who we know a little bit less about at the NHL level. And with someone like Lindy Ruff, we have to talk about his associate and assistant coaches because they're the tacticians of it while he's the manager. So it adds all of these uncertainties to a projection, and I think it gives you this range of outcomes because could they finish lower than that? Of course. But there's this much higher ceiling that they absolutely could push to if they can find the right elements from the last two seasons and go forward from there.
So the 1% to win the division, so you're telling me there's a chance like Dumb and Dumber? You're telling me there's a chance. There's always a chance. Okay.
Who knows? The Leafs could blow it and slide right out of the play. Who is to say? I'm not. I personally am not. We don't even know what's going to happen in the next couple of days of preseason if anyone will be ready to start the NHL season, okay? So everything is chaos.
Chaos.
Yuri Patera leads the Bruins to yet another Atlantic Division title. Apologies if you have explored this before, Shayna, and that we have not asked. But upon the commentary there about not being able to quantify coaching impact, is there a way to quantify soon-to-be free agent impact? The Sabres have close to 10 meaningful players on the roster that will be up for a contract of some sort next year. Some are going into UFA, some are going into RFA. Do you believe this is a good thing for teams to have a lot of players angling for not just winning, but succeeding personally?
It's tough to say. Like, I wish one day it's like a vibes impact chart we're going to make, like Big Dad energy. Where does that land in free agency? But it's tough because some people do wilt under the pressure, right? It really depends on the person. Like, there are instances, like, look at Tyler Bertuzzi last year, right? Like, 2 years ago, we thought he was going to get that big payday. And look at what he did when he got to Boston. It's like, there you go. He's playing for his contract. He goes to the Leafs and you go, he can't finish his chances. And here's all the issues. Like, you're not playing for your chances. And then you go to the Nylanders of the world and you're like, that man is earning himself a contract. Jeremy Swayman is earning himself his big payday. So it's a hit or miss kind of thing, but it's an individual achievement, right? Like, you have to do something, because while a contract shouldn't be based on 1 year play, recency matters. Like, general managers are human to a fault. Sometimes they're so human about it, right? Because they get so enamored by the recency of it all, especially when things come like down the stretch and into the playoffs. That's why a team like the Red Wings, right? Like, a lot of people are going to take issue with where we have them, because they're like, well, what if they pick up where they left off last season? It's like, well, that would be great and wonderful, but what did they do for the 60 games before that? Like, it all matters. So it's really tricky to say, will that help or hurt the Sabres? But I think we know, generally speaking, it's an extra motivator that should help for a team that, if anything, needs any extra kicks in the back that they can get, because last year was such a disappointment relative to the year before when they were one of the most electrifying teams in the league.
Okay. Your wild card for this year, and if you want to look at maybe a player that's starting a contract, not a player that's ending a contract, but Owen Power is starting his new long-term contract this year, year one. He was the wild card for this season when you guys put that preview together. I think Owen's going to have a great season. He looked good in preseason. But what do you mean by wild card? Like, is he a factor for their success or their demise? Or is he a support? Like, what do you mean by wild card?
Yeah, so we look at things like the big question, and that is the overarching theme that we're going to be curious about the entire year. And for a wild card, it's more like, it's a pivotal part of their season with a little bit of uncertainty behind it, right? For the Dallas Stars, which I wrote last night, it's, can Jake Oettinger bounce back? Their season doesn't live and die by Jake Oettinger because they're so good elsewhere, right? Like, they're a contender in front of the net, and we know that. But that's a pretty big part. That could be the difference between hitting your projection and racing to your ceiling. For Owen Power, we know he has all the skill. We know he has all of the abilities. And I think we're seeing it little by little, him build on it, right? The puck moving is outstanding. Mm-hmm. That's something, it doesn't grow on trees. You can't always teach the offensive instinct that he has, but you need to channel it. And you need to balance out your game. And for him, the challenge is going to be doing that without having power play one to shine on, because a player like him generally gets that top slot and can hit their ceiling a little bit quicker. So it's always an interesting wild card to see, like, how is he going to handle this season? Especially because, who's his partner going to be? Does he have the same position, you know, that same certainty and structure on his side that maybe he could use, or we think that he could have to, you know, take the bar even higher? Yeah. So I think that if he can hit his stride this season, and we know Darlene, right? If he can get back to his heights too, that's massive for a team that really relies on getting that offensive spark from the back end to get their forwards up to the level that we know they can be.
Well, the season starts with him and Byram together, and not just at 5-on-5, but on the power play as well.
Yeah.
What would your outlook for Byram be based on knowing that and him going into a contract year two?
For Byram, I think it's proving that he can play in a top four capacity, because in Colorado, he didn't get the chance. It was nothing about his game. It was just about who was ahead of him on the depth chart. So for the Sabres, we're looking at Byram, and we know he came into a role last year that maybe was tougher to adjust to on the fly than we think about, because you're not just now adjusting to a completely new team in a new system, and also a team you're not as familiar with because you play them twice a year, but now you're going into a role that you've never played. I think the second pair is a nice landing spot for him, because he's not going to go against top competition, which he's never had to do before, right? He's used to a little bit more sheltered minutes. So I think that allows him to kind of get away from the spotlight that he had with Dahlin. And the offensive elements, he's not by himself doing it. So I think that there can be, it's going to be a risk reward pair for sure, but the reward is so high because they have all these different qualities that'll click together. So I actually really like this move for the Sabres. I think it's something to experiment with. And, you know, they have so many different options to experiment with, but I like this to start. Like, why not? Because we saw the Dahlin Byram pair last year for a little bit, and we saw the scoring, but below the surface, it didn't match that. So why not take him down a notch instead of starting him on the third pair and letting him do it by himself? He has someone, so he doesn't have to always be the driver. He can be, you know, a co-driver. Why not? Mm-hmm.
The Sabres were third in goals for per games 2 years ago. I said at the start of the show, they are going to be a top five offense in the National Hockey League this year. Colorado, Toronto, the Oilers, the Rangers. There's a lot of teams. So is it stupid of me to say top five, or should I expand it to maybe top 12 or top 10? Or can they be top five offense with all of the pieces put together?
It's a hot take and I love it. I'm going to say let's ride with the top five right there. Because we know Tage Thompson, when he's healthy, when he's clicking, he's outstanding, and he does it in such a unique way. He's such an amazing player to watch. We know Tuck is a really good player with him. We know Cousins can be that great playmaker. You look at year one, and he's creating all these scoring. He's entering the puck with possession, but he's not always translating the zone entries to the scoring chances, and then he started to do it, and last year that fell off. So the elements are there for him to get back on track. JJ Paterka was unbelievable last year when everyone around him was kind of mid. So you're like, okay, now it's starting to come together. You add in Jack Quinn with a healthy season, and he's exactly what this team is missing. And the top six is showing potential. You shift to the back end and you have guys like Byram, Dahlin, and Power to add that spark. Why not say they could be that? I think it's an all situation top five thing, not necessarily a 5-on-5 thing, because I think they're going to get back on track with the power play, which I think we saw 2 years ago, just how good it could be. So tactical adjustments there are going to be huge, but I'm with you on that because the ceiling's there. The depth still needs work, and I think they need a little bit more offense to trickle down to the bottom six, but I think the top six and the top three blue liners they have, that's a real weapon.
2-0, 1-1, 0-2. What happens to the Sabres this weekend?
1-1.
1-0-1. I want to be different.
It's the first time you've ever taken a sitting on the fence approach, Shannon.
No, it's not sitting on the fence. I said they will not lose in regulation in these two games.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. That these games are always interesting, the global series, because I really do feel like we get like higher scoring than we usually anticipate games.
Let's hope so.
Exciting. So I feel like it's going to be like two really loud games in the first period, and then maybe we'll see what goes from there.
Nice. I love it. Shannon, thank you so much for joining us early. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks for having me.
Dana Goldman from The Athletic. You can catch all her season previews on The Athletic right now. Great group providing incredible content. We're back after this with our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
He's fired up. He's ready to go. He's Darren Dreger. He's our hockey insider from TSN in his customary Thursday afternoon slot. Yes. Hi, Dregs. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. There's lots going on around the National Hockey
League. Do tell. Yeah. Where's the focus?
A little bit of everywhere, to be honest. Where do you want to start? I mean, you've got all kinds of... Swayman, yeah, not a lot going on around Jeremy Swayman, unfortunately. That's not to say that, you know, they're still not engaged, which is maybe an advancement considering, you know, what we learned earlier this week, right? When Cam Neely came out and divulged specifics of how the negotiation was going, put out numbers there that clearly rankled Louis Gross, who represents Jeremy Swayman. I'm sure Swayman wasn't too thrilled with it. You know, in the day, I think, or in the moment, as both sides have pushed away, you know, there's still a recognition and a want to get something done here. This is just the sourness that goes into a lot of contract negotiations. This one is a little bit unique because I think both sides did a pretty good job of keeping it out of the public eye until Cam Neely decided, no, let's just lob that $64 million out there and see if anybody is paying attention. Boston knows that it's in the best interest of their organization to get something done. Like Jim Montgomery has talked about Korpisalo and the good camp that he's had. But I think we all can appreciate that, you know, Jeremy Swayman, based on his play, is an upgrade. And if Boston is going to do anything, they're going to need to be strong out of the gate. So there's still time, but both sides will admit that they don't have a timeline other than what Don Sweeney continues to remind us of, and that's December 1st. So I suppose the update really isn't one. It's just that they're continuing to negotiate and communicate.
I feel like, and I'm not saying that sometimes feelings take over, but when Cam Neely spoke, he was angry. And when Louis Gross spoke, there was some feelings attached to it. And I'm wondering if now Jeremy Swayman, who went to arbitration last year and kept a note on everything that the Bruins said about him in the arbitration hearing and kept reading it last year. And one of the things that they said...
Why would anyone do that, by the way?
Keep notes?
Take notes?
No, why would you keep revisiting something if it's negative? The whole point of everything now is to move forward, utilize people in your organization to get you in a better place.
I know, but Michael Jordan would fuel himself.
Yeah, fuel, but not negatively. Well, I don't know.
Told me I couldn't do it. Watch out. I'll do it. Right. Jeremy Swayman said they told him he'd never done it in the playoffs. Okay. Give me a chance. Let me show you. So I feel like feelings are getting involved now. That's never a good thing when you're negotiating $64 million or $70 million contracts.
I get it. But, you know, the Boston Bruins historically have also been that organization where players just take less, right? I mean, you know, we used to talk about, you know, whether it was
Ray
Bergeron.
They literally were the human salary cap in certain cases, right? Yeah. And, you know, then all of a sudden Charlie McAvoy comes and he demands and commands a big contract at 9.5. And I think we do have to be careful. And this is where it does get a little bit frustrating, I think, for all parties, is when numbers are being speculated on that maybe aren't true. Or you're talking about a gap where the parameters of what any initial ask might start as, and then the counter is this. Okay, well, that doesn't mean that it's insurmountable, right? And I'm in the camp that if I were that player, I went through arbitration, and it's the job of the club to try and keep that number as low as possible in that environment, I demo take notes too. So the next time when I've got leverage, or I think I've got leverage, which unfortunately from Swayman's perspective, as a restricted free agent, there's only so much leverage you do have. But that's the takeaway from a contract negotiation like this. I think of Winnipeg and Perfetti, who recently got their deal done. Mm-hmm. Well, you think Cole Perfetti enjoyed any part of that process? No, he didn't, nor did the club. But the hammer goes back to the player now. On a bridge deal, you have two good years, and then you remember everything that you went through, stuff that you think that you left on the table, and then you force the club into a different situation. So that's got to be the mindset or part of it anyway from Swayman's standpoint.
His value is also incredibly high. Should they trade him? If it is clearly at some point, if they clearly realize he has said or they have said whatever, if it comes to the point where one side says, we're not doing this anymore, it's over. What's his trade value? Where would he go? What would be the best fit?
And that's the challenge. You can conjure up fits. But as any team that has ever made a meaningful trade will tell you, good luck getting maximum return when the season has already started. When you're talking about a number one goaltender, how do you break apart the roster that you've spent, a chunk of your offseason, perhaps, your history in trying to develop just to accommodate? Now, let's see how the goaltending carousel turns here in the games ahead to start the regular season. Somebody gets hurt. There's always an appetite for a top-level goalie. I think Swayman would have to demand a trade and recognize that, okay, if they don't find the perfect fit and the perfect return, then guess what's happening? You're sitting on the sideline. That's what's happening. And I don't think that should be acceptable from his standpoint either.
Shouldn't be acceptable, but he'll make the money up at some point and missing a year. Like Michael Pekka sat out a whole year, right? And it wasn't about the money at that point. It was about feelings and, things that were mentioned and whatnot. Sabres traded him a year later. Got Taylor Pyatt, Tim Connelly, whatever. Is it full value for Pekka? Maybe not, but it was pretty good value. I think it's fine, but Boston's in trouble and Cam Neely seems angry and Don Sweeney seems like he doesn't really know what to say. So it's a big no-no going on. Hey, talking about goalies, Robin Lehner, he's not in the league. He's not playing. But now the Vegas Golden Knights are doing something no teams have ever done, is basically have to pay a guy and he doesn't count against LTIR or the cap or anything.
Just,
I'm giving you money, but you're not in our books.
Yeah, Frank Saravalli reported that earlier today. And it's a curious one. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure that it's created angst across the league, especially from, the cap teams are going, really? Like, how does this happen? But I would submit this, and this is just my view from, bigger picture. This is a unique situation here. And the Players Association, the National Hockey League, have done some good things with the player and club in mind, not about letting teams off the mat. And I'm not comparing the Goodrow situation in the Columbus Blue Jackets to this. This is different. But the reason the Players Association, I think, and the National Hockey League would come to this agreement that there can and should be cap relief because the player is getting paid is because it's sensitive to Robin Lehner and his individual specific case. And frankly, I don't think we're entitled to know what that information is. That, whatever's going on in the world of Robin Lehner, that needs to be confidential unless he wants to tell his truth and tell his story. But I can assure you that the cap teams around the NHL are reaching out to Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly going, really? Like, what is happening here? But it is unique. And again, from looking at it from afar, based on what I know, and this is just small details. Hey, Vegas could have taken a different approach, right? They could have terminated the contract. Now, obviously, the agent and the Players Association would have grieved at that point. But if Vegas wins that grievance, then Robin Lehner gets $0, right? So the contract is terminated. In this case, Robin Lehner gets paid. The PA, the National Hockey League, agree that relief should be observed here. And that's what happens, whether teams like it or not.
Yeah, I feel like, and not to unnecessarily get into details as to what's happening in Leonard's world, but I feel like from a league and team standpoint, a little more transparency here. And maybe it'll be forthcoming here very soon. So I don't want to, you know, offend here in the comment. It's just I can relate more with the cap teams right now wondering what the bleep like. And so it'll be very interesting to see, you know, how that evolves and whether
Vegas finally gets a break, Duffer. Vegas.
Well, I know. And that's the thing. Right. And you can imagine that. By the way.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Jets earlier. Feel like this story fell off the map.
Uh-oh.
Whatever happened when Nick Ehlers getting traded?
Yeah, he didn't.
And what will his value be at the end of this year when he finally walks himself into unrestricted free agency and there will no longer be any Jets and Ehlers trade rumors?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen where he walks himself into unrestricted free agency unless, you know, Winnipeg is doing incredibly well. They see him obviously as a key piece, and you know, if he continues to play the way he did last night, then yeah, we can envision that. And teams aren't afraid to use players, as you remember the term own rental.
Oh yeah,
I love that. You know what? I'll give Dave Nonis credit for that. I think he coined that when he was general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think it was Tyler Bozak who was on an expiring deal at the time. And he said, yeah, you know what? We could use him as an own rental, meaning, I mean, that's a piece that's going to help you in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What we know about Ehlers and the Jets is that Shevoldayev went down the road with some teams on a trade in this offseason. The Carolina Hurricanes was one of the teams that emerged and was reported on. That was true. There were elements of that trade that aren't true in terms of what else Winnipeg was going to have to give up. And Martin Natchez, I think, was the piece that was coming back to Winnipeg, but he made it abundantly clear he wasn't going to sign in Winnipeg either. So then it kind of goes off the rails and goes sideways. So I think that Ehlers is a conversation piece for us in the insider business, no doubt about that. But unless or until there's a real good deal that Shevoldayev can sink his teeth into. And he's got a track record, doesn't he, of making some pretty good deals, especially with players. And it's not that Nick Ehlers doesn't want to be in Winnipeg anymore. It's just, you know, through circumstance, all of that, you know, he's just come to the determination that maybe he doesn't want to extend there. And he's entitled to that as a pending unrestricted free agent. So he'll be near the top of trade boards in the not-too-distant future, for sure.
Okay, season starts for Buffalo tomorrow, but the preseason keeps going. There's been some fireworks, and we got like Geeky trying to fight Davies, and he had hit Edman, and we got Kirby Doc and Ridley Gregg, and then Jack High and Stutzla. Like it was wild. But then I go back to my time plan, and I'm like, I had a brawl against Washington, I had a brawl against Calgary. Like it just seems like people lose their mind in preseason, and once in a while we get reminded of that.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, look, we're talking about players who are trying to lock down spots on NHL clubs, right? Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to last Saturday where all the shenanigans began. And that was Cedric Paré of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who's, again, trying to earn a spot. He won't at the NHL level here. You know, if he just lets Patrick Laine waltz by him, well, he's getting an earful. Right. I mean, he gets back to the bench. He's getting an earful. I don't think that there was intent there. You know, Laine, as we can see, is trying to drift towards the middle. And there's an unfortunate collision. I think there should have been a penalty called on the play, but I don't think it was a suspendable offense. And now you fast forward to Arbor Jacki, you know, going after Cedric Paré, trying to exact his pound of flesh. Well, that's part of the toolbox.
Tried to decapitate him with a punch.
Yeah, I mean, it's not right, but you know this. I mean, you lived in that world. That's the job that Arbor Jacki has accepted. Now, he could have approached it differently, obviously, square up with Cedric Paré. And if Paré decides he's not going to fight, well, then, you know, he faces the wrath of his teammates and all of that around the league. This wasn't that. He jumped him. And, you know, there's a general sense out there, not from the Department of Player Safety, clearly, that Jacki should have been suspended for a game or two in the regular season for jumping Paré and pummeling them in the fashion that he did. And if he did that, Then you fast forward to Tuesday's game, and none of that would have happened. The only thing I would say is you've got two Canadian markets here. Well, three if you include the Toronto Maple Leafs. You break down that Jack Eye hit on Tim Stützle, and there are some inside the NHL office that thought it was borderline penalty, a minor penalty. Yeah. And he ended up getting an interference major and got ejected from the game and all of those things, but not suspendable, which also raises the ire of others around the NHL, rival teams who are like, what the hell is going on with the Department of Player Safety? So for George Parros, I mean, this is just standard stuff as we get towards the end of the NHL preseason.
Welcome to the Department of Player Safety. That's Ryan Getzlaff. It's his first preseason. And George Parros, I think, are in Nashville, and they're probably like, let's go to Tootsie's. We'll get away from it.
Dregs, we got to fly. We got a season to start tomorrow. We'll see you next week.
Love it. Thanks, guys.
Darren Dreger from TSN. Sabres Live continues. Stay with us.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Hey, Sabres fans, it's Ryan Miller here in Prague for the Global Series. Got a couple of old teammates here.
Hey, I'm Aleš Kutalík.
And Jaroslav Spacek. Hi, Sabres fans.
Not expected in the lineup tomorrow, that trio, but they are in Prague for the series and season opener tomorrow. Fantastic, human, legendary netminder. Happy 93rd birthday to Mr. Goalie Glenn Hall.
Amazing. 93rd birthday.
502 consecutive complete games as a netminder.
I played 508 in my whole career. He played 502 consecutive ones.
Unbelievable. Crazy. If you haven't looked up the career stats, please do so. We'll see you tomorrow for the season opener.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.